Welcome to Strabane's Hall's inaugural podcast, and thank you for joining us. As part of our podcast series on succession planning, this episode considers school fees planning and the interconnected areas of any financial planning strategy this will affect. Today, we're joined by our special guest speaker, Will Ford of Womble Bond Dickinson, and our own Senior Client Director at Strabane's Hall, Nicholas Tubkin. Will is partner at global legal firm Womble Bond Dickinson and has vast experience in working with families and individuals in their succession planning needs. And he'll talk to us about that experience and the valuable teachings he can share with us. Will works with both UK and international individuals and families, trustees and businesses on a variety of matters. His specialisms are diverse and include UK and cross-border estate planning, international succession planning, and wealth preservation. We're really delighted that Will could join us today. We're also joined by our own Senior Client Director, Nicholas Tubkin. Nick is also highly qualified and experienced and works with a wide variety of families and individuals, both in the UK and internationally. Nick specialises in advice on investments, financial planning, and wealth structuring. He's worked with a variety of clients on their intergenerational planning, including for those with often complex school fees planning requirements. Both Nick and Will will tell you some of the most important aspects of financial planning to consider when taking on any new substantial commitment, why every client is treated completely individually, and why working with both your financial planner and your legal professional is always a good thing. So without further ado, let me hand you over to Nick and Will.
Will, thank you very much for joining us to talk about school fees in the context of succession planning. Great to have you with us.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. This is a really interesting topic and one that I know a lot of our clients talk to us about, and I know yours do too. And school fees in the context of succession planning has a number of interesting planning opportunities, but also some significant pitfalls, I think. So great to have the opportunity to run through it with you in a bit more detail. I thought I'd kick off by talking about cash flow planning. It's an area of planning that we do a lot with our clients, and it's particularly relevant when it comes to succession planning and school fees planning, because it really helps clients to understand exactly how much money they've got, but particularly how much money is surplus to requirements. And if I think back on a couple of recent client cases that I've worked on, it tends to be most useful where a client's had a change in circumstance, perhaps where they've sold a business, received a divorce settlement, or received an inheritance themselves. And it helps them to refine their objectives, what they want to achieve with their finances, and also gives an order of magnitude in terms of how much spare cash they have available to help their children or perhaps their grandchildren. It's a really useful planning exercise and very helpful indeed. But on receiving the result in terms of how much spare cash there is available, it then begs the question what to do with it and how to pass it on to the next generation. And that's an area that we'd frequently work closely with another professional advisor in order to fill those blanks and to provide professional advice. One of those esteemed individuals would be you, Will, of course. And it'd be interesting.
Thanks, Nick.
It'd be really useful to understand perhaps some recent case studies that you've worked on where you've come across this topic.
Well, first of all, I'd really endorse what you've said about cash flow planning. I think it's easy to get blinded by estate planning options, and blinded in particular by the choice of structure that may be available. And cash flow planning is a great way of dragging it back into practical discussions that turn into numbers on a page and actually help clients make decisions. And the example I'm going to briefly talk about is it's a case study related to some work I did when I was working in a family office before I joined Womble Bond Dickinson. And we did the kind of cash flow planning exercise within the family office that you would do at Strabane's Hall. It was really useful as a way to build out the numbers around the plan for the client and the use of structures to make sure that it all fitted together. So what we did in this particular example was we had grandparents who really needed to start thinking about their estate planning. They'd built up too much wealth personally. I mean, too much in terms of what an estate planner would say. I think they were just fine. But they were looking at quite a big inheritance tax bill coming down the track. Actually, because it was an international family, notwithstanding that they were deemed domiciled for inheritance tax purposes, there was a big offshore trust that was in the background as well. So this particular client had a sort of safety net. If we overdid the inheritance tax planning, there was a structure that could benefit them later. Anyway, that's all context. What did we do for these people? We put in place bear trusts for their grandchildren, one per grandchild, and we put a portfolio in place for each of those bear trusts, which was invested because it was funded by grandparents. Those bear trusts were a little more tax efficient, and effectively we just made big potentially exempt transfers. So provided the grandparents survived for 7 years, all of the assets that had been given away were out of their inheritance tax estates. And the role of the cash flow planning for us, which I think you would say is how you use it as well, was really to make sure that we tried to get the numbers about right, so that most, if not all, of the money that was going to be put into these bear trusts and invested would be used up on school fees, so the grandchildren didn't end up getting a massive windfall when they became legally entitled at 18. And that's one of the points that, you know, you and I will often talk about on these files, is a sort of wealth preservation angle on all of that. When will beneficiaries get their hands on these assets? Are there particular risks presented by family dynamics or something like that?
Absolutely, and really interesting case study. And picking up on your last point there, what do you come across as the biggest risks or traps around estate planning with this type of exercise when thinking about school fees planning?
I think it really shows that every family setup is different. You may have a situation where grandparents are looking to make some provision for their grandchildren, because the intervening generation has fallen on hard times, or the intervening generation has attracted some particular business risk or some other form of risk to their own wealth, or they simply can't afford it. And we're in an environment at present where there are lots of winners and losers economically. And so, you know, it's quite current, all of this. You can well see that grandparents may be being asked to help out their children who are struggling a bit, and they might well say to themselves, well, I'd like to help out my children, but I don't really want to just give the money to them if they're in a risky line of business and there's some nasty potential creditors out there that could cause a problem to us. And maybe some of this money will end up in the hands of creditors rather than ending up in the school's coffers.
Very interesting. Thanks, Will. We often get people coming to us around inheritance tax planning, and more specifically around planning for school fees, and saying that they want a trust. And I'm sure you get a similar question. The whole arena of trust planning has changed significantly in recent years. Should people be using trusts for this type of exercise?
Yes and no. I mean, as always, and we've sort of touched on already, no family situation is quite the same. And, you know, on the case study, we just dived straight into using some trusts, didn't we? But there we were talking about bear trusts, and bear trusts are, if you like, the simplest form of trust that you'll encounter in this area. So for most tax purposes, if not all, a bear trust is just treated as if the assets are owned by the underlying donee. So we were talking about grandparents funding bear trusts for their grandchildren. In that example, for income tax, for capital gains tax, and for inheritance tax, the assets are treated as owned by the donee grandchild. So bear trusts are great. They're really simple. If you've got a grandparent around as well to make the gift into the bear trust, then you get the most tax efficiency, because if a parent does it, then while their child is a minor, the assets are treated as the parents for income tax purposes. So it's a bit less efficient, if you like. But those are the simple trusts in this area. And since the rejigging of IHT treatment of trusts that Gordon Brown brought in 2006, almost all other trusts that you create in life are taxed in the same way as discretionary trusts. So actually, now when you tend to talk about trusts, unless you're talking about some international family that's able to create offshore structures or something like that, you're talking about non-domiciliaries, then generally speaking, you're just looking at a choice between a bare trust or a discretionary trust. And discretionary trusts are just a bit more complicated and a bit more expensive. And the main difference is that they are subject to an inheritance tax periodic charging regime. And putting aside all the detail of that, the takeaway is just for cash flow planning, for sort of costing purposes, assume that 6% of the assets will be paid away on a tax charge every 10 years in one of those structures. That's broadly how the regime works. So should you use trusts? You should absolutely use trusts where you know exactly why you're using them. And normally that's for some kind of wealth preservation purpose, as we've talked already. But bear in mind additional costs if you're using a discretionary trust or something that's going to be taxed like a discretionary trust. It will cost a bit more in tax terms.
That's really interesting. Thanks, Will. And I suppose that begs the question then, if we were speaking to a client about trusts, they might just think it's a bit too complicated. And they might reasonably ask the question, why shouldn't we just give the money to the children or the grandchildren in respect to the school fees? What would be your reaction to that type of question?
I think it's important to sort of step back from the art of the perfect, if you like, and make sure that as advisors, we not only allow but encourage families to solutions that work for them. So if they strongly wish, using the grandparent example, if grandparents strongly wish to make just a simple gift to their own children for ongoing use for school fees, and there aren't other features of the family that make that a bad idea, they should just do it. You know, the intervening generation might have other uses for the money that are just as important. Why not? It's not all about tax necessarily. So an outright gift can be a good idea for the right circumstances. You know, we talked a bit before about some of the circumstances where that would be less appropriate. We talked about business creditor risks. The other big creditor risk out there in this context is, of course, marital breakdown and divorce. It's important to bear that risk in mind. But when the donor is comfortable on those issues, then an outright gift can be appropriate, and it is undeniably simple. It's a good idea to document it. It's very, very important to be clear. You know, you don't want there to be some debate about whether funds have actually been given away or whether they've been lent or something like that. That sounds ridiculous. Anyone listening to this must think, well, what on earth is Will talking about? How could anyone be unclear on that? And the answer is that it sometimes happens. You know, families have been to court quite recently on exactly that kind of lack of clarity. And the law doesn't help you if you didn't write it down. There are various presumptions that lawyers have to think about in this context, but there's no substitute for just being clear. So that would be my main point of advice there. Think really carefully, take advice, be clear whether you're making a gift or whether you're doing something else. Think very carefully about trusts. And if they don't suit you, be honest with your advisors. They might not. If in doubt, keep it simple. It's not a bad watchword.
Absolutely. Very good advice. Beyond trust planning and gifting, are there any other specific points of planning that clients should think about when it comes to succession planning and school fees planning that you think is really important to highlight?
I think in the context of making outright gifts, going back to tax points, you know, there's a useful exemption. If you've got surplus income, donors can give out of that income and they don't then have a 7-year risk. You know, the general rule is you make a gift, it becomes exempt if you survive it for 7 years. If you're able to show that you're making that gift out of your surplus income, then that 7-year tail doesn't apply. It's called normal expenditure out of income. It's important to sort of think through the practicalities. You really must have surplus income. You have to be able to demonstrate it, and your record keeping needs to be really, really good on that. So, you know, there are a host of practical steps you can take to make that work for you. It's an important one not to forget in this context, rather than just sort of diving into trust planning and that sort of thing. For the right client, that's very, very valuable. There are other structures that might be used, or other investment wrappers and that sort of thing. And this may be an area, I suspect, Nick, that you see more than I do, but offshore life bonds have a role in this area. They're basically tax deferral wrappers, but they can quite often be used by parents or grandparents in this context to sort of give assets away, defer the tax charge, and just sort of neatly roll up investment return in the intervening time. And there's a lot of technical work that needs to be done that around assignments of segments, carefully planning through where the tax charge will fall. Be very careful if you're using these offshore bonds with discretionary trusts as well. There's a lot of technical work to be done there, but they certainly have a role. One other point I just mentioned there, a bit of a trap potentially. Quite a few schools allow fees to be paid up front in advance, and you can find yourself in a position, if you enter into one of these advanced fee arrangements, where the revenue may argue that you haven't made effectively a gift for inheritance tax purposes, a straightforward gift or potentially exempt transfer. They might argue that there's an immediate charge to inheritance tax, depending on how that contract is formed and what the various rights are under it. It's quite unlikely that you'd have an upfront charge, in fact, but you might waste a bit of the person who's funding the fees of their nil rate band, which would be a shame. So if you're going into that kind of upfront fee arrangement, it is a good idea to have a bit of advice on that. There are some simple steps that can be taken to try and ensure that those risks don't arise.
Great stuff. Thanks, Will. So sounds like there are quite a few options available on the table, but it's really important to ensure that you're taking advice along the way to make sure that the option that you're going for is appropriate to you and your family circumstances. Are there any other final points that you'd like to highlight that you think are particularly relevant to this area of planning?
I think maybe just a final word. One thing that you do see in this context, it can sometimes shine a light on a family's overall estate plan, and decisions to treat children or groups of grandchildren slightly differently. I think it's really important for most families, when they're departing from equality, to get the comms right, the communications right at the right time. If all of the family clearly understand why specific arrangements have been put in place for a specific family member who has different needs or has had different opportunities or whatever it might be, the opportunity to get that right is, I would say, generally speaking, then, at the time that the unequal treatment is being looked at. So, you know, whether you write letters or whether you have family meetings, that doesn't really matter. But doing nothing, I think, is generally a bad idea. You know, it's a good idea to grip that and take responsibility for it. Trying to sort of put the genie back in the bottle when the donor has died is not impossible. You know, you can see that all right under a will, quite straightforwardly, actually. You know, you can include a discretionary pot under your will to even things up if that's what you want to happen, but you might not. So it is really important, I think, to plan ahead for what will happen if someone dies earlier than expected. In particular, should there be some evening up? Should there not be? Why was there inequality in the first place? Families are much less likely to suffer from difficult dynamics if they look ahead at that kind of risk and think carefully about it, write it down, and communicate about it. That would be my final good idea point.
Absolutely. And that's a great point, isn't it? That with so many of these things, if you have planned appropriately in advance for your succession planning, for school fees, and for covering a few eventualities that might come along, you're much likelier to have a better outcome, not only from a tax and from a technical point of view, but also from the perspective that your family is well catered for and knows what's going on and avoids any issues that might arise in the future. So thank you very much for joining us, Will. That's been fantastic. And
pleasure.
As always, it's great to work with other professionals to come up with appropriate solutions for our clients, and very much look forward to discussing this topic and others with you going forward.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Will.
If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, please leave us your feedback and look out for the other episodes in the series. If you'd like to understand more about how Stravens Hall can provide you or your clients with financial planning support, please reach out to us through our website. I'm Gillian Wilson, Marketing Director at Stravens Hall, and if you would like to be involved in one of our forthcoming podcasts, please contact me directly through the website. Thank you.